Thank you, Ruth. I've got to live up to that now. Apparently, there's no patron saint of economists. It's a bit surprising, that, isn't it? Perhaps it's time there was. Who would you nominate? Any ideas? So what was that? Oh, was he now? Well, maybe that's our first nomination. Someone else suggested to me Judas Iscariot, which is a bit unfair, I thought. But the nearest one perhaps we could go for is the patron saint of bankers. Any ideas? Let me give you a clue. Jesus saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," he told him. And Matthew got up and followed him. I'm sorry about the rather picture book style of this sort of children's Bible illustration, but I think it illustrates quite well that kind of nexus between economic and state power, doesn't it? Matthew's conversion must be the shortest conversion story in the Bible. I'll just read it to you again because you might have missed it. Jesus saw a man named Matthew at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," he told him. And Matthew got up and followed him. Of all the people that were milling around that Jesus could have called, he spotted Matthew and chose him. Here was somebody enthralled to the economic system of his time, who'd sold his soul to the empire. So too had his tax-collecting colleagues. Together they'd become a byword for rapacious and treacherous self-interest. They're kind of a demon of choice, aren't they? But we need to be careful. Seeing Matthew the tax collector as the social outcast received back into society enables us to flatter ourselves that we're on the side receiving him, that we're the good guys. But we don't escape Matthew's challenge. There is an empire in our midst today bent on eternal expansion. More than we're Jesus in this encounter, we are Matthew, exacting the empire's toll day in, day out from the world in which we live, and of course taking our own commission, both in ways we are aware of and in ways we are not. That's not a judgment, it's just a fact. Life has to be sustained, but maybe not the way we do it at the moment. The foundations of the empire that Matthew was kind of funding were already beginning to crack and subside, and he probably little knew it. And similarly, since 2007, observers of the global economy seem to be living in a state of permanent anxiety. You just, you know, read the pages of the financial portion of the broadsheets, for instance, you get constant anxiety coming through about where it's all heading. We're becoming increasingly aware also of the compromises in which we are enmeshed. We personally. We here today are among those who are the uneasy. Uneasy that the economic powers and principalities care little or nothing for true humanity or for the earth's precious matrix of life that sustains us. And it's not just us. Look at the Corbyn phenomenon over the summer. Read the Pope's encyclical Laudato Si. You know, take account of the kind of reaction, the really positive, at last kind of reaction that came out of that. We all know it can't go on, and yet we go on, seemingly entranced by the conventions of late consumerism and captive to its most insidious stratagem, peer pressure. The call to Matthew in us today is, as an Irish friend of mine would say, to catch yourself on, to discover that we're the ones busy at the tax booth of empire, and to realise that the empire has us just where it wants us. But then it's also an invitation to look up and be locked by Jesus' eye and to hear him say, "Follow me." And even then, that's not all. We're invited to do the simplest and the hardest thing, precisely as Matthew did, to get up and follow him. Matthew, the tax gatherer, got up and followed him. But where? Where? And how? Not much sign of a managed transition there, was there? Matthew the evangelist, probably the same Matthew, possibly not, leaves us to work it out for ourselves. Well, welcome to this second conference for Joy Enough. That's what we're here to do today. Some of us met in Birmingham about 18 months ago for an event which was sold out 2 months in advance. You know, that there was that sense there of something happening that we were tapping into. Some of us before and since have been contributing to working groups to scout the terrain for a just and truly sustainable economics, one that grows out of the good news, the gospel of humanity. What is the real good news about humanity that we have perhaps forgotten, that we long for, that the desires in us are welling up for? It's waiting to be heard, waiting to be discovered. We've been learning that justice does not have to be merely about mitigating the harms being inflicted on the planet, people and other species by an implacable economic machine. And we're not content with just adorning the dismal science with social graces. We've discovered something far more exciting. Economics can be a joyful art and a sacred enterprise. And we've learned that for us and for our society, it can be, and indeed must be, the theatre of spiritual renewal, both in the churches and in society at large. Good economics can unleash a culture of hope for humanity and for the earth. That's our subject today. So those of us that plan today, our intention has been that this will be very far from just a one-off event. It'll only be a milestone on a much longer journey, a lifetime's journey, towards a world that finds that joy in enough. There's been a prophetic strand of economic witness in the church's history from its earliest times. There have been many compromises, of course, but there have always been people who've kept that prophetic freedom, that opportunity for new life to alive. But the churches, I suspect, have yet to fully recognise the implications of the limits to economic growth. The Club of Rome was working on it in the 1970s, wasn't it? I guess quite a few people. Who's read the Club of Rome report? Yeah, quite a few hands. Congratulations, I haven't, but that's next on my bucket list, my reading list. But it's not just about recognising them. It's actually using them as a starting point for creative advocacy, for positive storytelling, for salvific, that's a different word, difficult word, isn't it? Salvific, saving storytelling. There's work to be done that's both theological and political, as well as economic. But above all, it's a task that's humane. It restores us to our humanity, to our scale with the earth. It makes us creatures once again. It makes us creatures of the soil, Adam, as Adam was, as Adam's name means. Unless we do that work, faith-led activism for economic justice will continue to collude in a system that's addicted to toxic growth and debt. Our campaigns may bring justice to the excluded of today, but it will be justice at the expense of future generations. And our faith in the communion of saints, our love for the communion of saints, is worth more than that, surely. So the first aim of joy in enough, as we can discern it at the moment, this is an exercise in discernment for all of us. None of us have done this before. We're learning as we go along, and you're going to be part of that today. The first aim is, therefore, to build acceptance that faith-based advocacy must acknowledge and respond creatively to environmental limits, and to accept, to recognise, to learn that they hold those limits. That reality holds the good news of our true humanity. It's written in the margins of the book of creation. Secondly, we need your help today to clarify long-term aims for a nationwide spirited movement to build a just economy within the ecological limits of the earth. We envisage this as a movement energized by faith, wherever it is found. Not just Christian faith necessarily, but faith in the future, faith in the earth, faith in ourselves. But it doesn't need to be the sole property of any faith or group. But what we can do today, most of us are Christians, not all of us, I see that, but those of us that are can today harness that renewable energy that's been laid down over centuries of Christian tradition, the prophetic impulse which rouses us in divine discontent and hope. As well as clarifying the aims for a movement, we need to conceive what such a movement would look like in practice if it's going to happen. How do you campaign for a one-planet economy? How do you do it? Where do you start? What can we learn from experience? For instance, from the Occupy movement. Now, by some accounts, if it was a failure, why was that? Was it because it framed the struggle as between good, us, the 99%, and evil, them, the 1%? You know, this kind of separation, this dualism. When in fact the same impulses are on manoeuvres in us all. If that's the case, the problem is not people or vested interests, but it's cultural values and relationships. Our relationships with each other, our relationships with non-human creation, with the whole earth. And the campaign objective will be that social awakening that Christians call repentance. But this is good news, this is the good news of repentance. Campaigners generally endeavour to craft bite-sized asks, don't they, for which can be put to politicians to act on within the parliamentary timescale. Nothing too sort of far-reaching, you know, it's got to be realistic. But how do we tackle a shift of values? Whom do we do it with? Who do we ask? How do we campaign for positive values rather than simply denounce an ethical demon? How do we own our own hypocrisy in a way that isn't just wounding, but actually empowers us, enables us to be ourselves, to become ourselves? Aren't we just biting off more than we can chew? Well, I'm here to look for answers, and I suspect we all are too, and we will need new approaches to finding them. So let's start today by breaking the silence on growth and debt, or is it a taboo? Is there a taboo at work? Let's conceive the possibility of change and help other people conceive of it. Let's map the coordinates of an alternative in terms which will excite and inspire. And perhaps if we get that far in one day, let's trace a common journey to its realisation. All of this will come down to real things being done with real funding by real people, like the real people here today. So one of the things we hope for today is to conceive the organisational infrastructure that might build, to discover it, to find out how to connect with it, where it already exists, as Christians, to bring our unique input, our unique perspective, the energy that we have to draw on, and to cooperate in that movement, and to identify individuals and groups who can do that actively and offer leadership. So we hope that you will join the us, so that together we build this spirited movement. And the most important paper that you have today is you were given as you came in. It's not just a feedback form. It's where does the movement go from here? You've got it in front of you, I hope. Write on it as you go along. Write on it. Don't just leave it to the end. Let's have your ideas. Let yourself be known. Hand it in at the end, because we want to make sure that we capture everything that's going on in your head and everything that you can offer to enable the churches to play an innovative, not just innovative, it's a transformative part in this movement. So let's work together to find out how to form a culture for good lives. And this ties us back to our point of origin today, the transformative role of spirituality. But it will be a spirituality rescued from its captivity to individualism and recognised as a public good, indeed the greatest conceivable force for good. So we'll review everything you tell us in our sessions and on your feedback forms, and having absorbed what you tell us, we'll consult only next year on how we propose to rally the churches to that cause, to answer the call of the gospel. The foundation of it all will be a new theological framework, I think. One which proposes that we not only believe in one God, but that we believe in one earth. That we will become truly human only at its scale and in its embrace. The road to joy draws us intimately into the incarnation by which God surrendered Godhead, took on the limits of creation, thrived in it, showed the way to true flourishing for ourselves and the whole creation. So the meeting at Matthew's Cashtill is a meeting not only of human beings, but of cosmic antitheses. One is an agent of the Roman Empire's relentless logic of expansion and growth, driven by extrinsic goals, striving on the upward path of supremacy and wealth at any cost. The other is sent on God's downward way, spending himself in the gift of creation, drawn by the intrinsic, seeking a home in the earth he had given himself to make, and actually scarcely finding one. These two trajectories, upward and downward, accumulating and self-giving, crossed paths at that tax booth, and the rest is history. Those two same trajectories meet in us, who are here today, in each of us. Which one will you follow, and where? To help us find an answer, we have two wonderful and important speakers coming up, and I'm delighted that Molly and Jonathan have accepted our invitation, coming themselves from two very different disciplines. The road between economics and spirituality is little travelled. Few go that way, and those who do are still pioneers. But the road between economics and spirituality should be one of the richest intellectual trade routes a culture can have. We have work to do, Molly and Jonathan, and we look forward to the help that you can give us.